If they had not yet reached the standard they had grown towards it, if in the sanctuary of silence they had not actually heard the voice of the Omnipotent, they had at least listened to the awful hush which precedes sound. Therefore they were stronger, holier, happier, for the experience they had shared, while they returned homeward filled with a hope in which there was no room for disappointment. When Mahanian came back to me, after having bidden his friends adieu, I began to ask the volume of queries which the events had suggested. Who was the angel chief of that bright company? I asked. His name is Imra, he answered, and I think that is all you can understand about him at present. If I were to try to explain his rank, station and duties, I should only be speaking in enigmas, so I am afraid you must be content with his name only. Have the friends who were promoted, I can find no other word to express my meaning, gone to be with him? No, they have passed into the vicinity of the home of our sister, the poetess, where I found you. And I should like to ask, if I may, where does Imra live? That you can never know except by sight, and I am not sure that I could lend you strength enough to catch even a distant glimpse of his home. You have seen the power of his glory when subdued in accommodation to the surroundings of this festival, but the brightness of his estate is the native purity which radiates from the holiness which is part of those who dwell so much nearer to God. But while I cannot hope that you will be able to define his home, if I can only succeed in pointing out its splendor, it will be another revelation to further stimulate your aspirations, and furnish food for reflection by and by. My soul thirsts for the knowledge, I replied, but I have seen so much that I almost fear to tax my recollection farther. Still you know what is best, and I am content for you to decide. Come then, with me, every cup in heaven is filled to overflowing. You remember the promise of Christ, you must realize it here, to him that hath shall be given, yea, even good measure, pressed down and running over. Neither is there any need to be anxious, for the overflow cannot be lost, your memory may not recall it at once, but when the need arises it will be forthcoming. Therefore, come on, and look as far as possible along the pathway of your future unfoldment. I must confess that I was timorously glad to hear his decision. I longed to behold the glory which should be revealed, but I was conscious of my own weakness and inability even as he spoke of it, and questioned myself as to what the effect would be when I stood in its presence. Nevertheless, I had confidence in my guide, as well as an inward assurance that I was beyond the possibility of injury, so with nervous reliance I took his proffered hand and we started on our new journey. How long our companionship would last I had not the slightest means of knowing, but I was ever increasingly aware that the longer I spent with any one of these friends the more hopelessly I fell in arrears with the queries suggested by their presence. Therefore, though the scenes through which we passed were more than sufficient to call forth all my powers of admiration and observation, my thirst for information was still greater, and I speedily began to tax his generosity further. In my intercourse with our sister, I said, she seemed to give expression to opinions which differed considerably from those I have heard expressed by others. Was I correct in my conclusions, or do you think I misunderstood her? I have no doubt you are quite correct, he replied. We have very marked differences of opinion on some points. How is that? I surely expected to find all such divisions at an end here. There is a vast distinction, my brother, between differences and divisions. I know that on earth differences of opinion frequently cause very painful divisions, but it is not so here, where we have learned that the truth but makes us free. Below it is held as a cardinal principle in practice that the geologist shall appraise a dogma at exactly the same value and according to the estimate of the theologian, or he is regarded as an atheist, and is rightfully shut out from the company of the faithful, and the same rule is more or less stringently applied to every other branch of learning. How absurd! Did not the same God who inspired the pen inspire the rocks? Did he infuse ink with the whole revelation and leave the rest of chemistry a blank? Was his will bequeathed entirely to the printing press, and the other manufactures left in pauperism? Were the confines of his love left to the discrimination of a bookbinder, and the artistic world ignored? Has the illimitable and infinite submitted to absorption by a Jewish nation and left no possible record for astronomy to read? As the macrocosm, So you will find the microcosm has its arrangement in order to produce the natural harmony for which it has been designed. We have arrived at the knowledge that no man can grasp, much less monopolize, the whole of truth, but every mind appropriates its own congenial molecule. By and by the whole of this variety of thought will be gathered together as a florist arranges his flowers into a choice bouquet. Every individual mind will then give utterance to its natural tone, and the volume of the whole will create and produce the perfect harmony of truth's full accord. In accordance with this you will find there is still a variety of opinions upon minor matters, preference for shades of thought regulated by the conditions of different individuals, but you will never meet with anyone who will call blue pink, or black amber. There was no room, neither was I in any mood for argument to my questions. He simply made a pronouncement in reply, which for the present I received, intending to make it the subject of reflection first, then discussion afterwards if necessary, when suitable opportunity should occur. There was also another reason which prevented me from pursuing our conversation further for the present. For some time, while listening with close attention to my friend, I had become aware that as we sped onward the atmosphere became lighter, until, as he concluded, I found I had quite lost the power of speech. I was overwhelmed with sensations strange and indefinable, not unpleasant, but rather the contrary. I had entered the domain of some invigorating, irresistible happiness, which buoyed me up and carried me forward with an increasing impetus which overpowered and silenced me. The sense of weight, of fear, of doubt, of everything save an inexpressible joy, had left me. I looked at my companion and then realized that the buoyancy and impelling power was due to the effort he was putting forth to give me of his strength to ascend. But I presently became conscious that even he was growing limited in this respect. There was for an instant a perceptible waver in our flight, but he threw his arm around me and drew me so close to himself that I became irradiated with his own brightness, which thrilled through me, seeming to bid defiance to all weakness. Then, by a single effort of his will, like a lightning flash, he bore me across the intervening space, and we alighted upon the peak of some azure-tinted, celestial mountain. How far we travelled upon that flash of will I shall perhaps never know, but it gave me an illustration of the speed at which it is possible for Mahanin to journey, and the method by which he reached the home of the Assyrian, which had previously caused me so much astonishment. Heaven lay unrolled before me. I can find no other word to convey even a crude suggestion of the scene, its purity, its beauty, and its peace, in its presence all that I had before beheld paled into insignificance. From our feet a mighty plain stretched into the far away, bathed in a soft, unchanging, pulse-less light, that by some miracle may once have kissed the pearl and made it blush with all its modest loveliness. Then, in the distance, however far the eye might travel, undimmed, distinct and vivid as the foreground, there rose to view chain on chain, and tier on tier, the heavenly mountains, countless hills on which equally countless terraces were spread, terraces large as plateaus, each vying with the other in mansions, parks and flowers, like models of angel cities standing in galleries divine, all canopied with the smile of God. Each terrace was bathed in its own distinctive glory, the brilliance increasing with the ascent. The sight conveyed to my mind the idea of a grand celestial staircase leading to the throne room of the infinite. At either extremity of those steps, as though to preserve the balance and complete the design of the heavenly architecture, rose the peaks of intersecting ranges, like regal janitors, bathed in atmospheric hues, changing in their ascent into tint, less glory where unsullied crystal pillars formed the background of the vision, bearing upon their shoulders a structure that blazed and flashed like a diamond reflecting the light of some eternal sun. Mahanin, when he had given me time to drink in the rapture of the scene, called my attention to that home of indescribable magnificence in the distance, and simply said, "That is Imra's home." But this, I was told, was not heaven upon which my eyes were feasting. It was but the Beulah land or link between the lower and a higher condition of the soul's development. My friend had crossed that almost illimitable plain, in the near foreground of which he pointed out his own home to me, ascended that divine staircase, and with Imra stood, as I was then standing, to look upon scenes more glorious yet beyond. Imra had gazed upon others, purer still, but how many lay between that point and God I cannot learn. Yet up these successive galleries of holiness each soul must climb before it can be satisfied, and see him as he is. Mihanin would now have carried me to see his home, but such a notion of bewildering majesty overpowered my sense of comprehension that I prayed him to take me back. Chapter 21 Home. Every detail of this life is educational. When one has opportunities for retirement to meditate upon the knowledge he has gained, he is overcome by the mass of information which here naturally unfolds from a single episode, as also the unanimity of testimony to enforce the one great law by which this life is governed, even though the contributing agencies appear to have no possible connection with each other. It will be remembered that one of the first incidents which attracted my attention after my arrival was the action of that poor woman trying to make her way towards homes for which she was unfitted. Erasmus explained the theory of the law operating upon in preventing her carrying out her desire. Kushner afterwards illustrated it for me in the case of Marie, and now Mihanin had given me a practical example of it in my relationship to the entrancing scene which lay before me. There was no external power present to prevent me reaching such abodes of rest. The way was open, and I was sure I should find a welcome if I could only reach their portals, but that if was the all sufficient why I did not gratify my heart's desire. There was no more barrier to my breathing the life atmosphere of those heavenly mountains than there is on earth to prevent the Laplander from sharing the beauties of the tropical summer. The only reason was in myself. My present nature was unadapted to the surroundings, hence they were not congenial to me. So, while it was heaven in a measure to Mihanin and his friends, I was overpowered, shall I say, uncomfortable, and anxious to be away. But while I was standing on those heights, with my companion's arm still around me, I learned one sweet lesson more completely than I had ever anticipated. The tender sympathy and humility with which those higher, holier natures render assistance to the weaker. Oh! The devices, the resources they have at command, and the readiness and the unostentation with which they are brought into requisition to stimulate and encourage one to put forth every endeavor to reach all possible developments and corresponding advantages. Their love takes hold upon the soul like a mighty magnet, and it feels wooed and lifted, unless the divine influence is willfully repudiated and released, almost against itself, into continual re-births of holier being. There is no patronage, no attempt to kindle a feeling of indebtedness for the service they so willingly perform, but they commence and carry on their mission, as if soliciting a favor, and all the advantages were theirs. Whatever they may have done, they have a wonderful power and aptitude of making you feel, no matter how great your enjoyment has been, that by far the greater happiness has accrued to them. What was it that prompted Erasmus to show me that panorama of the country, or Kushner to give me the delight of witnessing the chorale? Why should Siams instruct me in respect to the nature and condition of the sleepers, or Mihanin carry me to behold the delights in which he lives? I had no claim upon them, no power to render them, in the least, any compensation. There was only one motive, one reason, love. That great master impulse which sways its unchallenged scepter throughout the whole domain of immortality. I knew it, felt it. The one desire which actuated all with whom I had been brought into contact, had been to prevent my becoming too satisfied at the outset of my new life with the conditions with which I should find myself surrounded, whatever they might prove to be. Activity is the natural heritage of the soul, excelsior its motto, and holiness its goal. Thus their united endeavor had been to arouse in me a great desire to reach out after the ideals which ever lie on before, to realize the fact that the legitimate satisfaction of man can only be achieved when, like the psalmist of old, he awakes to the consciousness that he has attained to the likeness of God. Yes. I had learned that lesson, and as I gazed upon the vision before me, I felt conscious that their object would not be altogether frustrated, at least in my case. The wish to be able to roam those fields of bright glory, which were the home of my friends, but yet so far from me, was born within me, and I determined that my hope should not be crushed or thwarted by any object or duty which must necessarily lie in between, but through all and everything, I would press on until my feet had climbed unto this goal of my first desire in heaven. Mihanin prophesied that the site would fire my aspirations if I could but attain to it, and he was right. These aspirations now were all aglow. I was anxious to find my present home, that I might understand from whence I was to commence the stupendous ascent. I knew not where I should find it, hitherto, had never given it more than casual thought, but I longed to reach it now. Wherever it might be, it could be no more than the resting place for a sojourner. Whatever its pleasures might be, I had gazed upon others for which my soul would pant, as the hart panteth after the water, brooks. However rich its beauties, I had beheld greater, the memory of which could not be effaced, and I should never rest contented till I called them mine. Then the question involuntarily suggested itself, shall I be contented then? But so it would ever continue to arise if I attempted to answer it, so I pressed it down, and determined to bound my first ideal here. But as I came to this conclusion, a shadow passed over my mind as I thought of what an almost interminable distance might lie between me and the object of my desire. Mihanin was instantly conscious of its presence, though he did not speak, but I felt a thought which proceeded from him that opened out before me into another reverie, revelation that had more influence and consolation than words. There is but one way for all mankind to travel on their pilgrimage to God. The earth stages had been tampered with and rendered difficult to trace, but from where my feet were standing the way was clear and unmistakable. It was the way called Straight, whose engineer was God himself, and it bore his stamp and seal, even as we find it upon the face of nature. At this point nature became to me the interpreter of grace, and my soul drifted with its flow into the ocean of another revelation. What man can stand with watch in hand and say - the day is dead, a night is born? Who can divide accurately the seasons as they come and go? Who is learned enough to fix the boundary of sleep? The early frosts of winter are sandwiched into autumn's golden days, and spring dovetails her sunshine into icy blasts. Daylight comes back with insinuating pulses, stealing a footing unobserved upon the cheek of night. The opening leaves put forth so stealthily that even though we stand on guard to watch, we should be compelled to say, it is not, yes, it is. In nature there are no leaps and bounds, no gull, duh, sacks or chasms, or sharp divisions in its great law of progress. The order is unfoldment from within, stimulated by the appropriation of congenial nourishment from without. This same development is also observable in the stages of life, so far as they come within the cognizance of mortals. Who is learned enough to discover the instant of being, or tell the time of the soul's departure? Who can say when unconsciousness unfolds into consciousness, or the instinct of the babe gives place to intelligence? Who can define when responsibility is born, or draw a line between infancy and boyhood? So the parallel of nature and soul might be continued. But enough. If the same law is evident at the commencement, and continues as far as man can trace it, by what right do we assume that any change occurs beyond our ken? Given the same God as creator and preserver, author and finisher, and he unchangeable, why not the same law, and that immutable? The thought consoled me, gave me strength and peace. The distance between me and my ideal was no doubt great, but it would be reached by a natural process of which the duration, to a great extent, lay in my own hands. God is no respecter of persons. There is no royal road or cross-country cut to the throne reserved for an elect few, but one way, which is the way, the truth, and the life, and he who makes the attempt to climb by any other will be cast out as a thief and a robber. No, no, the red-handed assassin neither by lip or heart confession can take one leap from the scaffold, untaught, still trembling, and with lips from which the echoes of profanity have scarcely died away, into the presence of that God who is too pure to behold iniquity. Salvation does not guarantee a sudden transition from debauchery to the white-robed throng, from the ribald jest of profligacy to sing the song of Moses and the Lamb. It means acceptance in the Beloved when the penitent prodigal has carried out his determination to arise and go to his Father, has made the pilgrimage from the far country to the homeland, past the cross where he receives the promises and becomes an inheritor of that faith which is the substance of things hoped for, adopted into the family of saints and entering into the companionship of Christ, who will never again leave him or forsake him. He will be led on from glory unto glory. At each successive stage his soul unfolding that purity and holiness which will ultimately enable him to dwell in the eternal light through the eternal love. My companion was by no means anxious to terminate my visit even though I had suggested it. He was happy, so happy, there, it was his home, and when I had an interval either in my reverie, or wonder, to bestow on him, I was conscious of the intensity of his fervent wish that it was mine also, but it could not be for the present, so next to that, he allowed me time to look upon it until the enthusiasm was strong within me, which declared it should be as soon as I could rise to its requirements, then a gentle pressure of his arm indicated his wish, and I turned away. How long have I been here, in this life? I asked, when my power of speech returned to me. Only a few weeks according to the computation of Earth, he replied. Why, are you tired? No. I shall never be tired again, I can feel that, but I have learned so much and been so interested that I have never given a thought to time before. Why have you learned so much? He asked. That is a question you could answer best, I replied. It is simply because you have asked so much. Your Earth life was one long note of interrogation. Not so much to your fellow men, for they did not understand, could not have answered, you. But your queries were to yourself, to us. Now you have commenced to find the answers in the little we have been enabled, at present, to do for you. But, remember, we have only begun, we shall be glad to continue presently. In the meantime I will take you to your home, where you may recall your experiences so far, while you rest for a while and get rid of those influences of the body which still cling to you, and would prevent your enjoyment of other revelations that await you. Home, I repeated, did you hear my wish then, as I stood upon the hill? I have been so interested that I had not given one thought to this until I was looking upon yours, which made me wonder what distance could lie between the two. Was my thought a premonition of what was coming next? Perhaps it was, he replied. Come and see. Our way led through a succession of picturesque groves, alternated by lovely dells and glades, where we passed by few individuals, thus enabling our communion on many themes to be undisturbed, but I will not weary you with their recital here. I have volumes of greater experiences yet to relate, and if this effort but achieves its object, as expressed in the earlier pages, I will come again and continue my pleasant task. As we walked along, I observed every now and then the bright thought flash speed away from my companion in advance of us, while ever and anon a response came back, telling me that while he was instructing me, he was also holding converse with some distant friend. At that time I was unskilled in reading such correspondence and was therefore entirely ignorant of its nature. But whatever it might be, it only aroused a passing curiosity in my mind at its novelty. My interest was entirely centered in the subjects we were discussing. In passing through one glen, which from its extreme beauty excited my admiration and put an end to our communion, we, to me suddenly and unexpectedly, came across Kushner, Arves, and several other friends who were unknown to me. These, at Mahanian's suggestion, joined us, as he evidently did not wish to linger on the way. Shortly afterwards we met Erzmos and a company of choristers, who greeted us with a song of welcome. They too joined us, and we went forward listening to their music until we encountered Azina, with a large company of women, who came to meet Mahanian when they heard he was coming that way. Other additions were constantly being made to our numbers, many of the friends bringing instruments, others wreathed in flowers, as I had seen them in the festival, until we became the central objects in a long procession, joyful and exultant in the songs they sang to welcome my companion, whom I could not wonder they loved so well. Presently we entered a narrow valley between two ranges of hills, at the extremity of which we ascended a gentle slope whose summit commanded a view of a city magnificent beyond any earthly comparison. In appearance it looked as if built of pinkish alabaster, in design a regular square, with avenues running east and west, north and south, subdividing it into numerous sections easily distinguishable from where we stood by the broad divisions, and luxuriant in the mass of foliage which robed the trees. The buildings were elaborately ornate in character, and though of a considerable height, were in the main bit of a single story, with flat roofs, serving the double purpose of garden and promenade. Each palace, for only such a designation conveys anything like an adequate conception of their proportions, was surrounded by grounds of considerable extent, which in their arrangement displayed the varied tastes and designs of their residents. But the whole completed such a perfectly harmonious picture that Mahanin's ideal of the ultimate harmony of differences spontaneously flashed upon my mind. Everything, everywhere, as far as the eye could reach, proclaimed wealth, luxury, and repose, and as I looked over the wide area of the city I asked myself if it were possible that I should find my home in such blissful abodes as these. As we paused to survey the scene, a chime of bells added their welcome to the music with which we were surrounded. This appeared to be a signal for all the city to turn out of doors, and the whole multitude came forward to meet us. One of the first was Helen, and close behind her came one and then another whom I had known in those horrid dens and purlieus of London. Some of them were persons to whom I had been sent by that mysterious influence of which I had spoken and that I could never understand. Some I had helped by reading to them, while to others I had been of service in other ways, with some I had talked and tried to solve their doubts, endeavoring to reconcile their painful surroundings with the consistency of a god of love, to others I had attempted to explain my vague ideas of heaven or sought to give them some little solace by expounding my hazy theology. The recognition of more than one brought to my memory a forgotten promise we had made to meet each other beyond the river, to which they were true of purpose, while I could only claim to be so by accident. As I looked upon these well-remembered faces, in spite of the marvelous changes which had been wrought upon them, I felt that their number had somehow multiplied considerably, for though every single individual was well known, I had no idea the aggregate was half so great. They were no longer paupers, as when we parted, but in the interval, had somehow, and there is only one how, been converted into kings and queens, priests and priestesses to God the Father, and I felt more than honored now to renew our friendship. When I had come to an end of the more personal congratulations, the music swelled again into a chorus, in which the whole multitude joined, of welcome home. It was at this moment that I realized that all this ovation was on my account, and yet I could scarcely believe it so until I turned to Mahanin and asked, "Is this really for me?" "Yes, my brother," he replied, "in this city you will find your home for the present, and our friends have come to bid you welcome." Then I understood that the thought, flashes which had excited my curiosity were only signals, and our meetings with Kushner and other friends along the path were parts of an arranged program, I, all unknowingly, being the central object. The procession re-formed, but this time upon a much more imposing scale, and I was led forward, the honored one in such an honorable company, with Mahanin still at my side and my more immediate friends and acquaintances grouped around. Tears of joy and gratitude were my only response to the soul-stirring welcome accorded to me, and the tokens of affection lavished upon me on every hand, even the bells seeming to become instinct with life as they breathed forth a sympathetic congratulation. Turning down one of the nearer avenues, I could see our leaders passing into the grounds of a palace so exquisitely laid out as to engage my attention beyond all others, even when I first caught sight of them in the distance. But when I reached the entrance, and its full beauty burst upon me, I paused bewildered, to ask what place it was. "Home," was the only word my companion spoke in reply, and led me forward under the influence of such an ecstasy as one is sometimes permitted to experience in the domain of dreams. On nearing the house I perceived that the draperies which in this life serve the purpose of doors, had been drawn aside, indicating that all were welcome to enter, but the multitude fell back to the right and left. Their song ceased, and Mahanin took my hand and led me on. On gaining the entrance I saw the spacious porch fill with a company which might have been the angel host at that festival I had so recently witnessed. The central figure was clad in robes of light, though I did not recognize him, for my eyes, as yet, were too unused to look upon such brightness. Again I paused, but my guide, divining my thoughts, answered, "It is Imra." There was no time for more words, we were nearly at the crown of the steps, and in another moment I felt an inexpressible thrill of joy as his arms were thrown around me, and he exclaimed, "Welcome, our beloved one, in the name of our Father, enjoy thy rest." Then he raised my head and kissed me, while the assembly breathed amen. I did not speak. What could I have said? Who could find language appropriate for such an occasion?